Welcome everybody to Are You Not Kentertained? Today is July 24th. This is the second podcast I'm doing today. And no, this has nothing to do with wrestling for once. We're here to talk about Game of Thrones and some horror movies. And who knows, maybe wrestling will get brought up at some point. Who cares? Anyways, this is episode number 62. And today, I am joined here with Raylene and Chris. Neither of them have ever done a podcast. This ought to be a fucking train wreck. I'm excited as hell to see how bad this goes. Chris, how are you doing today, man?
Not too bad.
Good.
How about you?
Yeah, I'm here. It's cool. Raylene, doing good?
Wonderful. And yourself?
Fantastic. All right, so we had a good episode. I don't even know what the hell the episode was called, but it was the second episode of season 7. Really solid episode, and I thought it'd be a good idea to do a podcast, and Chris and I have been talking off and on about Game of Thrones, so why the hell not? So let's start off with the easiest question that I'm probably going to ask, which also is thought-provoking in and of itself. Chris, whose advice should Dany take, or Daenerys take, in regards to her plot to take over the Iron Throne?
Well, I think Tyrion is giving her the most... not say strategic, but... humane advice, in that if she follows like what Olenna tells her, she's going to end up just like her dad, you know, ruler of a burnt kingdom, because it doesn't matter how many sheep you're ruling, if you're burning them up, there's not that much left for you. I think the real question isn't going to be whether or not she takes the Iron Throne, but whether or not she's manipulated into war for the Iron Throne before she ends up having to take whatever's left of her dragons up north against the White Walkers when they make it south of the Wall.
Would you say that that she has to kind of deal with Cersei before she deals with the White Walkers? Do you think that's how it's going to go chronologically?
I think that she's going to have to, but again, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be her who's going to be removing Cersei from the throne, or if Cersei's... all the stones that she's laid are going to be coming to roost this season.
Ah, roost. Good word. Raylene, what are your thoughts? Whose advice should Dany have taken?
I don't know. With what happened with the women that killed the... What are their names?
The Sand Vipers? Sand,
yes. And then Theon, when they all got killed and Theon took off, she probably should take the advice of Margaery's grandmother and just burn it like her dad. Now.
Okay, now she does that, though. It gets her the Iron Throne, but... I mean, what's there left to rule over? Is there anything worth... I mean, she's dicked around for 6 whole seasons just trying to, like, do the right thing. Like, is it good to change pace now while she can, or should she stick her path?
Well, if she doesn't change her path, I don't think she's going to get the Iron Throne, like Chris said. I think she's going to have to fight the White Walkers before she even gets the throne, if she gets the throne.
Now, Chris, how important is the throne moving forward? I mean, is there really any importance to a throne with the White Walker army and the battle coming? Like, when all is said and done, is the throne going to hold importance like it always has? Or do you think something new may hold more importance than the throne?
Well, I mean, whoever's going to be the ruler of the Seven Kingdoms is going to be an important question down the road. But it's more like, you know, is it really going to be super important? Who's going to be ruling over what's left of us, if there's anybody left when the apocalypse is coming, you know, staring us in the face at this point in time? I mean, I know they haven't really brought it up in the show, but when the last time the White Walkers invaded, I mean, it took them centuries of just trying to recuperate to even survive that the dark time that the Grand Maester was talking about with Sam in the first episode when he was talking about the books that he'd read. So, I mean, even if they survive it, this is going to be probably as close as an extinction-level event that they're going to be coming to in forever. So, yes, it's important, but it's going to be important down the road in regards to whoever's left in picking up the pieces.
So, speaking of the pieces, Raylene, there's obviously the North is probably going to get hit harder than the South, one would assume. When all's said and done, is there still going to be Seven Kingdoms, do you think? Or do you think it's going to be more of a united land or more divisive than ever?
I think it'll be more of a united land. Like you said, I don't think there's going to be a lot to the North, because the North is going to be the first to get really hit. You might have more of your southern tier, but I think the North's going to get wiped pretty good.
So, and Chris, you can probably correct me on this, but Dorne is somewhere to the south of King's Landing, right?
Yeah, Dorne is basically the southernmost one of the kingdoms.
Okay, so, I mean, I don't want to jump ahead too much of my questions, but things are looking grim at the very least for the leader of Dorne. Does what's going on, does that impact where Dorne's allegiance will lie moving forward?
For one thing, this goes to show you what happens when somebody with no leadership potential bases all their decisions on emotion. And
are you referring to Illyria?
Yeah. I mean, she was never raised, even though she was a bastard child of nobility, she was never raised to be a leader. So when she ended up killing the king and taking over, even all the decisions she was making based upon emotion rather than probably what it would have been best for Dorne. So I guarantee that with her and the Sand Vipers gone, there's going to be no line of succession in Dorne, especially since she killed off all the rest of her family who would have been able to inherit. So whether or not Dorne's going to even factor into the situation anymore, or whether it's going to just evolve into who can pull up power there first, that's going to be a major factor in whatever goes forward. Although, looking at the number of episodes, I don't think we'll see very much of that on screen.
Alright, so that kind of leads to my next question. Raylene, do you even think we'll see Dorne moving forward, given everything that's happened?
It all depends on who takes it over, like Chris said. Who's left to take it over? Is anyone in that family left? I don't think so.
Chris?
No, I mean, Oberyn died when the Mountain killed him. His brother was in the bodyguard, who was the only other really Dornish person that we've really seen, were both killed by her when she staged her coup, along with her nephew. Which really only left her and her daughters as the only really major Dornish characters that we've seen. So I guess a lot could depend on what happens when Euron takes them into King's Landing, too. I mean, if one of them potentially escapes, then there could be some Dornish resistance, you know, leadership going forward. But if everybody gets wiped out like it's looking like it's going to happen, I don't think we see Dorne anymore.
I mean, just my opinion here seemed like I don't even want to say lazy. I think it's actually kind of a crafty way to write out one of the seven major kingdoms so that we don't have to focus on that, because, as we know, time is short for the show. So, I don't know. From my viewpoint, it is kind of a crafty way to get rid of that particular story once whatever plays out with Illyria, which, you know, we can make some assumptions. We'll talk about that later. What other, Chris, you're more familiar with the Seven Kingdoms. What are, do you know all of the Seven Kingdoms?
There was Dorne, which was ruled by the Martells?
Yeah.
There was Highgarden, which was ruled by the Tyrells. Casterly Rock and the Lannisters. There was the Riverlands and the Tullys.
Is Braavos one?
No, Braavos is across the sea.
Okay.
It's one of the free cities. So Dorne, Highgarden, Riverlands, the North, the East, and the Eyrie. Casterly Rock, and I want to say the Dragonstone and King's Landing in that area.
Okay.
So the main houses were the Martells, the Tyrells, the Starks, the Lannisters, the Baratheons. The Arryns, Lysa and Jon
and Robin now.
Robin,
yeah,
yeah.
With the Riverlands, I mean, that was where Walder Frey was. Is there anybody in charge of that anymore?
Yeah, because, even though Frey was in charge, really, I mean, if you look at what happened last year with Jaime and, Caitlin's brother Edmure, when, they took the castle from the Blackfish, that had been the capital of the Riverlands before that. And when Jaime went, the whole episode where he was like, if you don't help me get back to my sister, we're just going to fuck your shit up. That was pretty much establishing that even though Walder Frey was in charge of the Riverlands, the Lannisters were the real power behind the Freys. So.
All right. So, I mean, Raylene, do you think that this episode showed that Cersei has more control than what we led? Like, episode one, it really appeared that Cersei was kind of like almost at a weakness. You know, she's either going to focus on like one or two targets or spread herself too thin. Did this episode kind of reverse all of that and show that Cersei still has good control, or do you still think that she's going to be spread too thin?
Nah, she's got control. She learned from her dad, so she's got a lot of ideas that I think are going to come to fruition pretty soon.
Chris, regarding, I don't know how to pronounce the name, Qyburn, I believe. How do you know how long he's been serving under the Lannisters?
If I remember correctly, he was a maester. He had been kicked out for, his experimentation. I don't remember if he was serving the Lannisters, straight up, or if he was just in King's Landing and hopped on, the Cersei-Joffrey train when that went through. It'd been a long time since I read the books, but it hasn't been longer than the situation that we've seen. So it's not like he's been serving them for years and years and years and she dragged him up. It's relatively recent.
Do we know anything more about him? Because, I mean, right now he seems to be the ace in the hole here. I mean, without him, I don't think Cersei has anything. If Qyburn goes down, I think Cersei's pretty much dead in the fucking water in a lot of ways. Do we know, other than just being super fucking smart, does this guy have anything else up his sleeve? Does he have any powers or anything of that nature that you know of?
He's kind of almost the anti-Melisandre in that, she was Stannis' whole power base, basically. And he's the same way, in a way, with Cersei. Since, as her father told Jaime, they don't have the money that they've been reputed to have. They don't have huge armies anymore because they've been in war for years and years and years. But, no, I don't think he has any magic powers. I think he's just basically Dr. Frankenstein / burn them all to hell / I can invent a giant ballista, which I'm surprised nobody ever did before when dragons were going to attack you. So I think it's just his knowledge, his ingenuity, his knowledge of, he probably studied the books that nobody else was paying attention to in Old Town. Maybe Sam could be set up as like the anti-Qyburn if there's anything going down the road in that regard.
Yeah, it strikes to me that Qyburn's like the guy that when everybody else was zigging left, he was zagging right. And so like where everybody has like certain strengths and he just focused on like where the weaknesses were. And I guess that leads to the dragons and the ballista. Raylene, I know you're terribly upset over the thought of the dragons getting got, but my question to you is, how many of those dragons do you think are going to get got?
I knew you were going to ask me this question. Well, probably at least two. So the one that's almost full size, I don't think I'll get got, but the two smaller ones probably will.
All right, Chris. Same question. Do you think it's going to be two that get got? What are you thinking?
I don't know. I mean, that's been one of the big speculations over the years and years and years that people have been reading. This is leading up to like the situations that are happening in this season, where you know the guy back in that tower in Karth back in season two, when they had the prophecy about the three heads of the dragon and who is going to be riding them. You know, people have been talking about, hey, who is it? Is it going to be Jon? Is it going to be Tyrion? Because there's the whole thing, is Tyrion the illegitimate son of the Mad King through his mother that had supposedly had the affair with Tywin? So I'm gonna go on record and state definitely one, possibly two. I don't think all three.
Yeah, I would say Drogon appears to be the safe bet here. So this leads to what I initially asked. Now that we've seen this unfold, in hindsight, do we still think that Daenerys is making the right decision by going with her strategy? You know, because, you know, had she just gone and flew the fucking dragons and burned a lot of the shit down, she would have gone up against very little competition. And now, I mean, she's got some shit to deal with due to plotting out things a little bit more strategically, more methodically. Basically, did Daenerys screw herself, Raylene?
Yeah, I think she did. Now, especially that Cersei is really plotting and getting things together. But you're going to have to burn it down.
Yeah. I don't know. I've been saying that she should have gone in there. And I'm not even sure if Daenerys would have really had to burn down all of King's Landing. I feel that she could have just came in and done enough damage to be like, listen, I could either keep destroying or you guys could leave, type thing. Chris, you've been reading the books. Is that something that could have gone down, or would she have legitimately had to burn down off King's Landing to get the power, would you say?
I mean, she could have attacked with the dragons, yeah, definitely. But, I mean, even as strong as the dragons are, think about it. I mean, they haven't really shown them going all out, like, super fantastically, and they're living beings. You know, it's not like they're you know, some kind of like dragon robot that they can throw out and they automatically just keep flying and flying and destroying everything and don't stop until they call them back. They get tired, they can get overwhelmed. I mean, like Cersei was saying when she's talking with Qyburn, you know, Drogon got injured with just a handful of dudes with spears in a pit. I mean, the whole reason that they were so successful when the slavers from Astapor attacked in Meereen was because all of their ships were clustered up together in a harbor. I mean, because of what Tyrion did in season two with the Battle of Blackwater Bay, they can't invade with their ships to King's Landing at the same time. All that shit's still set up. Not necessarily the fire oil, but all the chains and the booms and everything, so they would have to go through one ship at a time. So yeah, they could launch attacks with the dragons into King's Landing as much as they wanted, but they don't have a place where they can land the rest of their troops to support him or to take the pressure off of the dragons. So they would be getting shot at with arrows, you know, Kyber and Super Ballista, all the normal shit. So they would be able to fuck some shit up, but they wouldn't be able to take King's Landing just by themselves. So now I think it's going to be a longer situation for her to be able to do anything, because she lost half of her fleet. I mean, the other half was off bringing the rest of the people to Casterly Rock, but she hasn't completely been wiped out ship-wise. I mean, none of them had any reason to know that Euron was going to be there, so there was no way they could have predicted that, although, you know, we can see that in hindsight. I'm pretty sure that there's going to be no way they don't take Casterly Rock, so right there, it's going to be pretty much putting them on the same setting that they're at right now in regards to their situation with Cersei, where one person has an advantage in one way, one person has an advantage in the other way, and it's going to be, you know, who can seize upon these advantages that they give themselves to see whether or not they're going to succeed.
So, I have to admit, although all of your points were fine, I'm going to stick to the point of a mechanical dragon robot, and that makes me just wonder, like, could Qyburn do to a dragon what he did to the mountain? Because that would be fucking incredible on so many levels.
I was kind of getting excited when he saw, you know, all the dragon skulls down the basement. I was like, oh, is he going to Franken a dragon together? But then he just shot it with a crossbow bolt. I was sad.
Oh, you know, the Ballista also reminded me, and I don't know if you played this game. Did you ever play Dungeon Defenders, Chris?
Yeah.
So you know, what was it, Dragonspire, like level fucking 16 or whatever, when you have to fire the Ballistas? That's what I was thinking of when I saw the episode last night. So yeah, we'll get back to Cersei in a little bit here, but let's go to the north here. John's doing what John always does, not taking the advice of anybody else and just fucking doing his thing, leaving Sansa behind, and Littlefinger gave the greatest look of the fucking episode. Raylene, what do you think Littlefinger is going to do?
Oh, he's going to be all over Sansa to marry her, and what's he going to be, second hand to her? He won't be the king of the north, but if she's a queen right now and he marries her, he'll be like second in command.
Chris, how does that work? If the dude marries queen, does he become king, or what the hell does he become?
Well, it would go like if there was, well, it would go just like as it is in the east, though, in the Eyrie, where even though he was married to Lyssa, he wasn't the heir. Robin was. He would just become regent, and so whoever they appointed heir. Unless the person who was going to become the next king, heir, what have you, would have been old enough to rule. In that case, he would just be nothing, you know, former consort. Good thing in that situation for him not to be able to gain power, even if he does marry Sansa, is the fact that Bran just showed up at the wall, and I don't see it taking very long for them to get information that, you know, technically the rightful Stark heir, you know, just because of the way paternity was back then, is still alive when everybody's thought he's been dead since Theon invaded Winterfell. So we'll see how that turns out.
So speaking of that, all right, Raylene, what will it take for Littlefinger to potentially get his Littlefinger and Sansa? I mean, is he going to just be able to sweet talk her, or is he going to have to set up some events, or something else going to happen, maybe not even by Littlefinger's doing? Say Bran shows up in the north and suddenly Sansa's screwed out of power again. Is that going, like, what do you think is going to be the trigger that leads Sansa to Baelish?
Yeah, I think Bran is going to show up and she's no longer going to be queen, and that's just going to turn her, I guess, to the evil side, as we say, if she's not already there. But I think it's going to be some event that turns her to Littlefinger.
Chris, same question to you. And also, Arya is younger than Sansa, right?
Yep. Okay. Arya is... I want to say Arya's older than Bran and Rickon, but she's the younger daughter.
All right. So, same question to you, though. What will it take... What do you predict is going to be the catalyst for Littlefinger and Sansa to forge a relationship of some sort?
I don't see it happening at all, honestly. I see her possibly using Littlefinger, but I don't see her ever getting with Littlefinger. Especially because after he went and said, oh, I'm helping you out, I'm sending you back home, take over the North, she spent a whole year being raped by Ramsay Bolton. I don't see her forgiving him for that. Maybe at the end of the season, I see her on the Iron Throne, but I don't see her betraying people or being a dick to get to that point. I see her admiring Cersei because she's taken power and because she is ruthless, but I don't see her turning into Cersei to do it. Maybe Cersei Light, but I don't see her selling her family out. And at this point, I don't see any way that she's able to completely take over in the North. I mean, she's there and she could be scheming, but she's got to see that Jon basically right now has unilateral support from all of the lords. So what, are they going to just turn around and support her for what? She hasn't been any kind of war hero. She's been married to a Lannister and a Bolton, both of who are basically the biggest enemies that the North has had in the entire show so far that it's been going. If anything, I see her, and she's going to betray down the road, I see her shoring up her position and kind of consolidating her power, whispering words and kind of stuff over the course of this season, and then maybe down the road next season, throwing up some kind of betrayal when Jon and most of the armies are going to be involved in fighting the White Walkers, and she's going to be able to take over back at the home base, so whenever the decimated forces come back, she's sitting in a place of power. But I really hope that doesn't happen. I'd like to see her, you know, at least one person in this show be a better person than the majority of them have been.
I would say probably since like season 5, I have pegged Sansa as probably one of the three, if not even the single most interesting character moving forward, because there's so many directions that she could go, and it depend on a lot of things that was probably, you know, beyond her control, but it was always a matter of how she would react to it. So far she's handled a lot of stuff with dignity. I could see, you know, somebody possibly trying to invade the North, we'll say, you know, Cersei or something. You know, maybe while Jon's gone, if Sansa was to lead the North to a victory over an attack from Cersei of some kind, I could see that helping her get a little bit more, sway or power or commitment from the other houses or whatever. But I don't know. I'm still kind of hoping that something cool plays out with Sansa. She intrigues me. Going from Sansa, we'll go to the other Stark daughter. We're going to go to Arya. This is a question straight from the blog at ninedeuce.com. Raylene, will we ever see Nymeria again?
Did we not just see her? Or... That was her wolf, wasn't it?
Yeah, what I'm saying is, will we see Nymeria in any episode moving forward?
I don't think so. Just by how she responded to Arya. I don't even know if she recognized her, but I don't think we'll see her wolf again.
And Chris, same question. I know that the book kind of... Obviously, the book has differed in warging and all that shit. You and I have talked about this. How do you think this plays out? Will we see Nymeria again in any capacity moving forward?
I'm really not sure. I mean, I was of two minds when I saw that scene. I was like, either this is, you know, Nymeria saying, you've changed too much, you're not the Arya I knew, there's no longer that bond there anymore, or she was forgiving her for abandoning her and making her run away, and possibly down the road we'll see her. I'm sorry to come off so committally on one side or the other for you, but...
Damn you, Chris, you non-committal bastard.
Just call me Russ. Anyways, I have to apologize. Nah, yeah. Possibly. The eight, Magic 8-Ball says maybe.
Raylene, who makes it to the north? Who makes it to where Sansa is first? Arya or Bran?
Depends on which is closer, the wall or wherever Arya is. I don't know.
Chris, do we... Wait, we have a general idea because she met up with the Lannister army, so she can't be that far away from the north, can she, Chris?
No, she's basically in the Riverlands, which is, say, maybe a couple weeks. Maybe, you know, two weeks, maybe less. But think about the fact that, like, it took Jon, what, half of the first season to get to the wall? It's a lot further to get to the wall from there. Not to mention the fact that Bran is still crippled. So, I mean, no matter how they travel with him, whether he's tied on a horse or is he in a wagon or whatever, it's going to take a little bit longer than a single person traveling by themselves able to just ride straight across the countryside. Arya should make it there first. So that would be really interesting to see because she still thought Sansa was a traitor when she took off. So...
So, I guess based on that, Raylene, you'd probably go in with Arya as well?
I would say so.
Kind of cemented your position, huh?
Because it depends if somebody has to drag Bran again, or if they're going to just plop him on a horse.
Will Arya come across the Hound again? Raylene?
I would hope so. Only because they kind of got a bond. But then she kind of let him go to Brienne. So, I don't know. I hope so.
Now, Chris, I don't think we're ever going to get to this point, especially based on the limited time left in the show. If push came to shove again, if Arya had to pick between the Hound and Brienne, would she side with the Hound still, do you think?
I think at this point she would still do the exact same thing she did and duck out and say fuck you to both of them. On the other hand, I think Sansa might have the stronger bond with the Hound than Arya, since he was the only one who really protected her up to the point that she was married to Tyrion in Joffrey's court. Like, if you remember, he was the one who stopped her from being raped in that, what's it called? In the riot in King's Landing when Joffrey took off like a little bitch. So that would be interesting. I could see either one of them having more interactions with it, and they'd be both coming from very different spots. So yeah, I think it would be cool if the whole Brotherhood Without Banners, Arya and Sandor all met up in Winterfell, while Jon's off doing whatever he's going to be doing with Dany and Sansa's in charge. That could create some interesting tension.
And while we're on topic of Hound, let's go to one of my favorite topics, Clegane Bowl. Raylene, will the Hound face the Mountain in some kind of battle before the show ends?
Well, I hope so. Because Hound needs some retribution against his brother, but I don't know now that he's Zombie Mountain how that'll work. Perhaps maybe Hound dies and then they resurrect him and they both get to fight again.
Yeah, actually, that was once I saw Sandor with the Brotherhood. That was exactly my thought, is that there would be a fight and Sandor would lose, quote-unquote, round one in fucking Mortal Kombat, and then he'd come back, get resurrected, and fucking finish him Mortal Kombat style. Chris, do you think we're going to get Clegane Bowl, or do you think that's going to be something that's just got to be dropped due to time constraints?
No, God, I hope so. I saw some spoilers once that I don't know how true they were going to be. A guy put up like a, I want to say about 4 years ago, he put up a fake thing about this was what the plot of book six was going to be. And then when I saw season six came out, he was roughly like 75% on his correct on his guesses. He did it for an April Fool's thing, but he was like pretty spot on with a lot of the shitty guests. Last year he put out another April Fool's thing for what's going to happen for the very last book, which would be this season in season eight. In which case, we didn't get Game Bowl, but I'm going to hope that he's fucking wrong and that we do get to see it. I could almost see, you know, tying into the Arya thing, if she ends up traveling with the Hound again, I could see that happening because he's one of the ones who's on her list, too, where she goes to kill him, the Hound dies, gets brought back, but the Mountain kills her while he's dead, and so he has to avenge Arya when he's back up. One of the things that makes me really think Arya's not going to make it is because George R. R. Martin has said that she was supposed to die, you know, multiple times, and the only reason he kept her alive was because his common-law wife that he has, she's his, Arya's her favorite character, and she said, if you kill her, you're not going to be getting any, so I find that a little interesting tidbit.
Who's remaining on Arya's list? I know Cersei's remaining. Who else is remaining on the list? Do you know? Remember?
Gregor Clegane, Tywin Lannister's dead. Illyn Payne was the Kingsguard who actually killed Ned and used his own sword to do it. I think they've said, though, that they won't bring the guy back because he either got sick or he died and they weren't going to worry about recasting him as well for just a small part because he was also a mute, so it was like he couldn't even speak. So they pretty much, I think, said a couple seasons ago when they were doing an interview with Lindelof and Cruise that, you know, he's just going to be a non-issue.
Wow. Learned something new today. Interesting. I would say, I mean, because I have a ton of questions, but quite frankly, if we're going to do, you know, five or six more of these fucking things, I don't want to keep going and asking too many questions. So let's go to the finale. Let's talk about Hot Pie for a second, because that guy's one of my guilty pleasures. I got so excited when I saw Hot Pie. Raylene, when you saw Hot Pie, did you have any glimmer of hope of seeing Gendry?
No, because I forgot that he was with them. You know me.
Chris, did you have any glimpse of hope?
Yeah, I think it would be cool. I mean, if Arya ends up with a happy ending, I could see her and Gendry taking off into the sunset together. On the outside chance, though, I mean, I know we talked about it. He's not in the cast list for this season, so unless they did a super job hiding him compared to other people that they've cast for stuff, I don't see that. Maybe next season then, because they haven't announced the cast list for that. But at the same time, with Stannis being dead, he really has no relevance in the story. He's not figured into any of the houses that are going to be fighting for kingship. Nobody in any kind of power even knows that he exists, because everybody who did is dead except for Arya. So at this point, bringing him back would just be bringing him back to, or I take that back, Melisandre knows he's still alive, but in Davos, but
also Jaqen does, right? Does Jaqen actually know who he is?
I don't think he did. I think he just knew that they were, you know, part of Arya's troop that he had to help escape to fulfill the deal he made with her.
But, all right, so here's a question, maybe from reading the book you might have an answer. Does Jaqen have access to, say, info that, I mean, just, like, does he actually just get info from the fucking faceless god, or does he have to learn it the way that everybody else learns info?
In some ways, that's way past what's happened, because where it ends in the book, Arya is still training to become an assassin. You remember how she lost her sight for a little bit in that one episode? That lasted for, like, the entire last book. And she had to actually commit an assassination while she was blind. And when she completed that, they gave her back her sight. And she went to go further inland instead of coming back to Westeros to go to the main temple of the Faceless God to learn the advanced secrets on how to take faces. So, I mean, this is one of the spots where it's deviated. Like, the Waif wasn't even a character at all in the books. So this is a deviation from the book to the show that I think has gone better, because otherwise Arya's story kind of goes like Dany's, where it's 6 years in and she hasn't really done anything. So
I loved the Waif. She was a fun character. But, I mean, now you've kind of bummed me out here, because now I'm starting to think that there's two happy romantic things that can happen in this show in my mind, and one was for Arya and Gendry to rule, but you kind of burst that fucking bubble, so thank you very much, Chris. So now I'm left with Brienne and Tormund, I don't know how to fucking pronounce these people's names, but
Tormund,
yeah, like, come on, everybody wants to see that. Is there... Raylene, are we going to get to see that romance bloom, or is it just a big dick tease here?
I don't think so. I thought we were going to see Jaime and her, because she kind of had a hard-on for him for a while. But I don't think Jaime will ever betray Cersei.
Chris, do you think Bran and Tormund have a chance, or is it just one of those novelty things that the internet has grasped onto far too strong?
I think it's a funny as hell every scene I see them in. Like, she sees him coming up and Podrick's finally able to hit her. But it might happen, but I think Jaime has to die in order for it to happen, for her to be able to get over her her woman crush, or her, I guess, her woman boner she has for Jaime right now.
Speaking of Podrick, how is he in the book? Like, is he the same in the book as he is in the show? Do you have any other info? Because we don't really know shit about Podrick other than, like, he's kind of like this lovable guy that isn't very good at what he does. Is there anything beyond that in the books?
Well, we know he's, like, super endowed from the prostitutes in King's Landing. I don't remember how much they went into in that. No, he's pretty much the same. I think he's maybe a little bit less bumbling, but he's, you know, he's one of, like, the good, honest, loyal people in the books, so...
Okay. Yeah, I remember the whole... Who got the prostitutes for him? Was it Baelish? Was it Tyrion?
I want to say it was Tyrion and Bronn as a reward for when he did that shit.
Bronn. There's the name. I miss Bronn. What... what could Bronn... Do you think Bronn even has a role moving forward here, Raylene? Like, is there any room? Like, what would you even have him do? Would he be helping Tyrion? Would he be helping Jaime? Would he just be doing his own thing?
Does anybody know where he is now? Is he still in Dorne? Or did he escape?
I thought he was. He was in his castle.
He was back on the ship with Jaime. He was living in the castle, went back to the castle that they gave him. Jaime said that he would get him hooked up with the attractive, whatever noble woman compared to the one that he had been married to for his assistance, but we haven't seen him. I would like to say he could serve as somehow a go-between to get Jaime and Tyrion into a scene together again, considering that basically those are the only two people left alive who he's really had any kind of commitment to, or... potentially, wasn't the Sand Snake who, like, hooked him up the one who's still alive? So, potentially, I guess he could figure into maybe a rescue attempt or something to go with them. But yeah, I miss Bronn, too. I'd like to see him back.
Yeah, sign me up for Tyrion, Jaime, and Bronn on the same scene, and maybe give Bronn a song to sing. I would be pretty fucking happy about all of that. So, I mean, like, 10 minutes ago I alluded to this, but let's move on to the... final scene, and this kind of, you know, where we'll taper off our Game of Thrones discussion. But as everybody saw, Euron just showed how much of a badass he is. Raylene, did Euron do enough to win over Cersei's hand in marriage?
No, he needs to do more than that. Not just bring in the sand people woman that I think is dead.
This isn't Star Wars. You can't say sand people.
I forgot her name.
It's Illyria? Illyria? Chris, help me.
Illyria Sands.
There we go.
That was one of the interesting things that they really didn't touch on, just to hijack for a second, is that like each one of the Seven Kingdoms had their own name for bastards. So like in the north, it's snow. In the south, it's sand. Over in Highgarden, it was flower would be their last name. So that kind of shit.
Well, okay. I've learned more stuff than just one thing today. That's fantastic. Chris, do you think this gift will be enough to win over Cersei, or do you think he's still got to do some more shit?
I think he's going to bring them in and he's going to start winning over Cersei, and it's going to drive another wedge between her and Jaime. This isn't necessarily enough to convince her to marry him, but I can definitely see it enough to convince her to start stringing him along, and maybe even bang him, because she hasn't had a problem doing that with whoever she felt like before, so...
Raylene, do you foresee... I mean, in my head, I'm seeing that they've portrayed Euron as a pretty badass. Are we going to get Jaime versus Euron in a duel at some point?
Yeah, if Cersei starts banging him, that Jaime's going to probably end Euron, I believe.
Chris, do you think Jaime can beat Euron, or do you think Euron has the upper hand?
I don't know. I mean, we'd have to call it the Battle of Three Good Hands. Before that last episode, I would say maybe Jaime had a chance, because, I mean, shit, even Bronn was just taking it to him every time that they were practicing. But Euron's a fucking badass, man. I haven't seen anybody else in Game of Thrones really go berserk like he did. Like, he got what, stabbed like three or four times, beaten with a whip, you know, hit with a sword, and he still fucked everybody up. So yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah, like, I mean, I would like to see, I mean, in a fantasy fucking world, I'd love to see Jon Snow versus Euron in a battle to the fucking death. Like, he just proved himself to be a complete and utter badass. I was very impressed. I also would have liked to have seen Euron versus, and I can't remember this dude's name, the dude who trained Arya with the sword, and he got killed by, who was it, Miron Trant?
Cyrio Pharrell. Yep.
This is why you're on here. You remember names. Yeah. I don't know. That guy was great. I miss him. So where does Yara fit into this for you? That's Theon's sister. Where does she fit in moving forward? Is she just going to be a death? Like, is there something more to it? Does she have more of a story to tell? And is Theon going to be involved in any fucking way?
No, I think she's going to be a death. Theon is just... he's too damaged by Ramsay to really do anything. We saw that in this last episode. Like, he just froze from when he was tortured.
Yeah, he certainly did not wreak havoc.
Ah!
Chris, is Theon... does Theon have a chance at redemption moving forward, or is he too far gone?
I don't know about redemption, but what I'm really interested in seeing is what happens the next time he sees Bran.
Oh, yeah, that'd be a... because, what, they haven't seen each other since, what, season 3?
Yeah, since he lied about killing them, but, I mean, the last time Bran saw him was the time that he was just fucking murdering all the people left in Winterfell. You know, his buddy, the old dude who was his Ned's chief of guards dad, you know, the maester, all that shit, so... be interesting. I bet Bran harbors a little ill feelings towards Theon still. I don't know.
Couldn't that be the most satisfying kill? Like, left, like, tell, admit, that's gotta be one of the most satisfying kills, is if we could see Bran just mentally mindfuck Theon to death. That'd be great, right?
Bran warg into Theon and turn him into Hodor 0.2.
Oh, I miss Hodor. It's not just because I'm a fat gentleman. Hodor was great. But, yeah. I don't know. I know a lot of people hate Cersei, but I think Theon's infinitely more loathable. Who do you side with there? Who do you hate more, Cersei or Theon, Raylan?
I'm going with Robin. I'm not even going with those two choices.
Glad to see you participating. Chris, maybe I get a more clear-cut answer from you. Who's more loathable?
I still think Cersei is. I mean, she's just... she was torturing her little deformed brother in the cradle, you know, trying to pinch his cock off. Like, I don't understand how you can be that fucked up from that young of an age, be as fucked up as she is now and not contemptible. I mean, I think Jaime is just beginning to see it. He's like, our son killed himself because of you. She's like, oh, we'll just make more. I mean, Theon made a bunch of stupid choices, but he fucked himself with, like, every single choice he made. And then he fell into Ramsay's hands, and Ramsay just, you know, went a little bit too far. So I think Cersei's more contemptible. There's no way, hands down, Theon isn't the most pitiable person in the show, I think.
Now, this is going to be an odd question, but you might be able to answer this. Based on where that water war was fought, are we looking at cold water, warm water? Like, does... I'm assuming it can't be that cold or else Theon wouldn't have a chance at survival, right?
Right. So if you think about it, they were supposed to be going to blockade King's Landing, which is relatively south central on the east coast, okay, according to the maps and everything that they've shown. Dragonstone was north of King's Landing, but south of the Riverlands. So basically... probably the next closest kingdom, if that's not part of what would be considered the same kingdom in the lands. So they're probably relatively warm, or, you know, if it's cold water, at least it's not going to be like if he was going up north to north of the Riverlands to the Northlands, where, you know, freezing in the matter of minutes would be the thing. I think Theon's probably going to be able to survive, you know, floating into shore or being found by somebody else in a chain... you know, on a ship to see him, rather than, jacking it from, like, a Titanic.
Yeah. Well, you said jacking it, so that fits with all of our listeners that do listen to this. Fantastic. One final serious question, then I want to get into a couple quick-fire things, and then we'll wrap up the Game of Thrones chit-chat here. But I asked this on the blog at 9deuce.com. Raylene, how does Melisandre fit into... Is she going to be a valuable asset to Daenerys, or does she have a game plan up her sleeve?
I think she'll be good with Dany, but doesn't Dany already have someone like her? Or am I mistaken?
The Red Priestess that they met before they left. On the ships, right?
So,
the young girl?
Isn't she with Dany or no?
Chris and I was actually just talking about this last night, and Chris, give your thoughts on that.
They never said one way or the other whether she was going to be on the ship with them. I mean, when she originally showed up, she was going to help them kind of calm down the citizenry in Meereen from all the Sons of the Harpy bullshit. And she did, but they never said whether or not she was coming with them. I'm assuming, and like this was one of the things that Ken and I talked about last night, is that in an effort to reduce the amount of time in the episodes that they have left, they're probably going to say, oh, she stayed back in Meereen to help control the situation there, and that way Melisandre can be the single Red Priestess, priest, what have you, in the area. Although I guess the guy with Brotherhood of the Banners is a priest of the Red God too, so there could be two.
Is that Dondarrion or Dondarrion, whatever? Is that his name, or is it the other guy that's the Red Priest?
Beric Dondarrion is the guy with the one eye that the Red Priest brings back.
Okay.
Thoros of Myr is the Red Priest with the gay topknot, according to the Hound.
Fantastic. All right. Now, I think I'd like to do this at the end of every podcast that we do Game of Thrones related. I'm going to throw out five names of characters and quickly want to know if you think they're going to last till the end of the season alive. First one up, Grey Worm, Raylene. Will he live or die before the end of the season?
He's going to die.
Chris?
He'll live.
Okay. Missandei. Grey Worm's chick.
Oh, she'll live.
Oh, she'll live.
Chris?
I think she'll die.
This is exactly what I wanted out of this segment. I'm so happy right now. The Mountain.
I think he's going to die. Again.
Chris?
He'll live because we'll get Clegane Bowl in season 8.
Okay. Jaime.
He'll live.
I'm going to go live. Ha! We both said live.
Wow. One out of four you guys agreed on. And finally, let's go with, I don't know who would be fun to kill off. Let's go with Olenna Tyrell. The old lady.
She's dead.
Oh, she's got to live.
All right, so 20%. You guys, that's fan-fucking-tastic. That's great. That was actually kind of fun. I'm going to actually have to prepare a list better next time. I came in not prepared at all, and all these questions have just been off the cuff, so that's been fun. Normally I have Carrie, Eric's wife, do all the prep work. I'm very lazy when it comes to this stuff. Now, another thing I wanted to touch on, and any listeners, if you're not into horror movies, this is probably the point where you turn us off and never listen to us again, and that's cool. You know, you can just go straight fuck yourselves. But we just did a blog at 9deuce.com about the Evil Dead franchise, and I figured this would be a great time to pimp that shit out. Chris participated, Raylene, you did not participate. Chris, just a couple of quick questions I'll ask Raylene too. What was your favorite of the three?
It depends on what kind of movie you're talking about then. I mean, if you're going horror movie, it's got to be Evil Dead, because that's really the only one that's a straight horror movie.
No, I'm asking like just personal favorite. If you had to,
favorite, I have to say it was Army of Darkness, because that was my first exposure to the whole thing too. You know, like I said a couple times in the various things we talked about in your blog, although my parents weren't very sheltering, they never really were the kind to like really be in big to horror themselves. So they weren't pushing, you know, horror movies. So it wasn't like a lot of people who grew up where their parents were watching Jason or their parents were watching Freddy or their parents were watching Michael Myers to, you know, be interested and curious about this stuff, you know. So I would see the commercials on TV and get scared shitless about, like, Freddy being able to invade my, you know, dreams and fucking take me out, and I'd be like, oh, god damn it. But I do remember seeing, like, the cover for Evil Dead 2 in the video store when I was a kid, and I was like, wow, dude's got a skull for a face. That's pretty cool. But then when Army of Darkness came out and they were doing the advertisements for it on TV, I mean, this dude looked awesome. He's got a chainsaw for a hand. He's got a shotgun. He's fighting skeletons and undead and stuff. So I went and saw it, went into it, not realizing that it was the third movie in a trilogy. I think the very next weekend after I had seen that, I was staying with my dad because my parents were split up at the time. And we went and we rented the first two and we watched them back to back right after that. And I was like, wow, what a difference between the three movies in terms of tone. But as much as I like Evil Dead 2 too, because I don't want to give it short shrift, I know you said you know, people tend to overlook it because it's came in between them, I still have to say Army of Darkness is probably my favorite.
All right. Now, Raylene's been looking at me saying, no, I don't want to answer this question, so naturally I have to ask her. I know you watched all three of them with me once, and I remember you giggling throughout most of Army of Darkness. Our Evil Dead 1 had the tree rape, and Evil Dead 2 had the where he cut his hand off. Which one was your favorite?
Probably the first one, because the tree rape was pretty good.
Okay, I muted myself on accident. Good job. But yeah, the tree rape was pretty fucking fantastic. You know, it was weird because I don't remember seeing commercials. Well, obviously, I wouldn't have seen a commercial for Evil Dead 1, and I don't remember when Evil Dead 2 came up, but I don't remember seeing commercials for it. I do remember Army of Darkness commercials, and I was like, okay, so it's a part 3 to this Evil Dead trilogy, but it looked so goofy. I was so confused on what to expect from Evil Dead 1 and 2. And, you know, it wasn't until my teen years that Captain Video renting 5 movies, 5 nights, $5. Greatest deal ever. And I watched them all. And I still gotta go with Evil Dead 1. But it's weird. Evil Dead 2 will never get its proper props because it was like, it was almost like a perfect horror comedy in a lot of ways. Like, it did both things well. It's just that it didn't excel in either one. It just did both incredibly well. With that being said, we all have seen the Evil Dead remake. Raylene's also giving me a weird face about... Okay, well, I'm not going to talk to you about it. Chris... I believe you used the term blasphemy in the blog. Is that correct?
Yep. It wasn't that bad, but at the same time, we had the same discussion last night. Like, if the whole point of a remake is if you're going to do it, you need to either be updating something that's hopelessly dated to just kind of make it relevant for modern audiences, or you have to make it better than what the original was, and it didn't. It, don't get me wrong, it had some effective scenes. Like, I'm not a big fan of, like, eye horror, and that whole thing with the eyeball kind of bothered me a little bit, but, I mean, other than really, like, a plausible reason for them to be up in a cabin in the middle of the woods for a long, extended period of time, there really wasn't much going into it that it brought, you know, either originality or to update such a well-revered classic,
I mean, for me, the biggest thing was changing the whole gender of the fucking protagonist was a slap in the face, and the girl could never... they didn't have any humor in the remake, and that was... I mean, granted, the first one didn't have much humor, but it did have a few moments of levity that the remake never had. And in a weird way, Chris, would you agree with me that Cabin in the Woods almost felt like a spiritual successor in some way to Evil Dead?
Oh, definitely. I mean, out of a good majority of the homages that they portrayed in that, I mean, very blatantly, the whole premise of the Cabin in the Woods going down into the basement to find the ancient evil thing, not paying attention to what was going on. Even the gas station where the dude's like, hey, you know, what are you doing going up there? Blah, blah, blah. You know, it's a bad idea. Everything was ripped straight from Evil Dead. And I could see it almost being like a little nod from what's-his-face, Joss Whedon, to, Sam Raimi in regards to making that.
Would you say, like... I guess basically because they're doing the TV show now, it served no purpose. I always wondered about doing a remake of Army of Darkness because, I don't know, it was kind of, I don't want to use the term limited, but technology and special effects have come such a long way. Do you think they could have ever done an Army of Darkness justice had they remade it, 20 years later, or would they have just vilely fucked it over, Chris.
Again, I think they would have probably fucked it up. I mean, really, the whole point of Army of Darkness is that it's the continuation of this dude's shitty adventures, you know, after reading the Necronomicon in the basement of the cabin in the woods, you know, and going through the Evil Dead and Evil Dead 2. So, I mean, if they just set out and they tried to make one by itself, I mean, A, would have no context. Why is this guy going back into the past? You know, what's this Necronomicon? I mean, obviously, we know what it is because we've seen the originals. But, you know, you have to take that into effect. So would they effectively have to remake the entire trilogy just to get to that point where they could remake Army of Darkness and make it well? I mean, yeah, definitely technologically they could fix some stuff. But I would rather see Sam Raimi do like a George Lucas and post-process the shit out of the special effects in that and keep the rest of it original. Although I do think some of the film stock could use a little bit of upgrading, because even now, if you look at like the DVD versions, it definitely seems like the film has maybe taken a little bit of damage compared to some other movies filmed around that time, where it seems a lot clearer and more sharply cut.
Yeah, and I mean, hell, even on the Blu-ray, it's there's a lot to be said for it. I always thought, though, that Army of Darkness, even though it was, you know, the third part of a trilogy, I always thought that, you know, if it was handled right and they breezed over the opening story, I mean, like, Army of Darkness actually did tell a little bit of the story, but if a remake spent, like, the first 10, 15 minutes actually telling the story and how we got to that point, I always thought that could have been interesting if they would have tried to launch, like, just try, instead of remaking Evil Dead 1 and 2, if they just tried that, I always wondered how successful it'd be. I feel it would have mainly attracted just the fans of the original film, but I always thought it would have been a neat idea to have tried it, because I can't think of any other movie that has a part 3 that, you know, you could start just at part 3 and tell a whole story. It would have been, I don't know. I would have liked to have seen them try it. It probably would have failed, though. I don't know. It's one of those things. Do you watch the TV show, Chris?
I've seen all of the first season. I started the second season, watched the first half, and then I lost Stars, so I stopped being able to see it. So I haven't caught completely up, but I've seen the majority of the episodes that they have out there.
Gotcha. All right. We are actually past the hour-long mark. I think we did good. I think this is a good time to get to wrapping this up here. We'll be back next week. Chris, do you have next Monday off? Is that what you said last night?
This week I work Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Yeah, I have Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday off next week.
Okay, so we should probably aim to do this again next Monday. I don't know. Fraylene will be involved. I have no idea. But you and I, at the very least, will be back next Monday. Raylene, do you have any predictions for this coming week on Game of Thrones? Do you see anything big that you want to just boldly predict right now for the world or the one person who's listening to hear?
No, I do not.
That is bold as fuck. Chris, do you have any bold predictions for this coming week's episode?
I don't know if I necessarily have any predictions, but I've been really looking forward, and I know a lot of people have, since the first book came out, to John and Danny actually meeting. So I'm looking forward to that scene in Dragonstone from next week.
Yeah, that seems like the big thing. I don't know. I'm just hoping, I don't know, I want to see some more progress made with the Hound, and I kind of want to know what's Jorah's, I don't know, how he's doing with his skin at the moment. That moment actually had me gritting my teeth just a little bit. Even though it was a TV show, like, I was like, God damn it, that had to sting. So I guess that's what I'm looking forward to. I don't know. I'm going to say Yara dies next week because fuck it, why not? With that being said, I want to thank both of you for being on. As I said, next week we'll be back. And I don't know. Other than that, if you're listening, tune in next week.
Oh, can I say one more thing before we go, Kat?
God, it's almost like I'm working with Sorry. Russ. Go ahead.
Sorry. The scene right before Euron attacks with Illyria and Yara, I think that was probably my wife's favorite scene of the entire season so far.
Oh, where, yeah.
Where she's like, are you going to protect her because a foreign invader's coming in?
Yeah, that got, gosh, it was like a good counterbalance to Missandei and Grey Worm having their, I don't know, pseudo-sex of sorts, I guess? So,
his nub,
yeah. Well, it happens. So, yeah, good stuff all around. With that being said, we're going to sign off. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next week. And with that, everybody hit stop on your Audacity. It's the third button in.